When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Lena Solmar, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between. And we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. Welcome to PHLY Flyers, presented by Mortgage CS. Check out mortgagecs.com/PHLY to start your home buying process today. Company NMLS ID number 1464766. My name is Bill Matz. I'm your director of fun and games for the evening. Joining me today, Philadelphia's number one hockey beat reporter. It's Mr. Summer Vacation himself. It's Charlie O'Connor.
It's Charlie O'Connor with 60% less stress.
Charlie, not to say that obviously deep down somewhere you're a Flyers fan, but if they had to lose, you know, it's not the worst thing.
Well,
I think anyone understands.
I think there's an element where I wanted the Flyers to make the playoffs because it felt like the culmination of a season of hard work that they did. I definitely wanted
covering
that.
The playoffs is cool.
From a selfish standpoint, I also wanted the playoffs because when teams are in the playoffs, people care more. Then we get more viewers. Then our startup company has a better chance of surviving. So from a selfish standpoint, I did want the Flyers to make the playoffs. However, this was a situation where it's harder to get really excited about the playoffs when you know that there's no chance the team is going to have a chance to win the championship. They're like there was John Tortorella straight up said it in his end of season exit interview. He said, "I don't think we do much in the playoffs, but it would have been nice to get in." That's the frigging coach who's like, "Yeah, I think we probably would have lost in like five or six, but like it would have been cool to be there." And I don't think he's wrong, but it does, you know. It would be one thing if you're like, yeah, we're going to the playoffs and we got a shot to win it. This would have been, we're going to the playoffs to get boat raced in the first round.
I mean, like, I think it was our Keith Jones interview right before the trade deadline, maybe, where he was just talking about, like, if someone's going to call up and trade for a Scott Laughton, it's because they overpay because they think their window is this year and next year.
Yeah.
And it was like, by saying that, you were telling me that this is not the window. And like, this isn't a grand revelation.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, anyone with two eyes knows the Flyers weren't winning the Stanley Cup.
Well, I mean, and the argument you hear sometimes, and I'm sympathetic to this argument to a degree, is that you get in the playoffs, anything can happen. And I don't think that is completely wrong because there are Cinderella runs. They do happen. What the point I've always made, though, about the NHL, the way it's structured now and the way it tends to play out. Now, hey, maybe the next 3 years there will be some team that is not very good wins three straight cups. And you're like, all right, well, maybe things are changing. The way it's been really since the lockout, but definitely since like the start of last decade. there are Cinderella runs, but those Cinderella runs never end in you winning the championship. Sometimes they go all the way to the Stanley Cup final, but those teams never actually win it all. The team that wins it all, it's not always or even usually the President's Trophy winner, but it's always one of the like six or seven teams going into the playoffs that everyone knows are really good. Like, you don't know which of the elite teams is going to win, but you know one of the elite teams is going to win.
It's like eventually they're going to play each other.
Yeah.
And then we'll see. But there's really like of the 16 playoff teams, like
for now,
16 can't win.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk about the playoffs in a minute. And I think one of the I think it's either Canes or Rangers out of the East, because guess what? Their opponents have zero chance.
Yeah, the Isles, like, and the Caps are bad. But yeah, it's just like, I guess the only team you could say in recent years that probably wasn't that great and won it all was St. Louis.
The Blues.
But the thing you have to remember about the Blues is that the entire second half of the year of that season, they played like one of the four best teams in hockey. So maybe they just got on an incredible heater. But the thing is that that heater didn't start in mid-April. That heater started in January, and they just carried it for six straight months.
It started at the Wells Fargo Center, with Jordan Binnington shutting out the Flyers.
Exactly.
And like, let us not forget that, that team wasn't that good. They did have Tarasenko, not at the height of his powers,
but still good.
It's Vladimir Tarasenko.
Petrangelo.
And Alex Petrangelo.
Yeah, was a legit, like,
now the
elite
number
defenseman.
One on like one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah,
again,
and Ryan O'Reilly, who was he was at peak powers as a Selke two-way center.
It takes, while those runs happen, it just takes more than the Flyers have.
Yes.
Especially with Couturier in the shape he would, like, all, like, if it was January Sam Ayerson, maybe.
Yeah, and
but like
December
now,
Sean Couturier.
Yeah, but like now, no. Yeah, not exactly. This version of
no,
those
the
guys.
Idea that, like, well, all you got to do is get in and then something, then, hey, they could go on a run. I really don't think the Flyers were equipped to go on a run, and I think even the Flyers knew that.
They made it known at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, here, have our, and we're going to talk about Sean Walker maybe in a minute too. But first, we got to get to some John Tortorella stuff, because Charlie wrote an interesting article. Well, this goes back to our conversation on Friday.
Yes, that was my immediate thought coming out of it.
Yeah, this goes back to our conversation on Friday where I was like, well, it's good to see Tortorella because he kind of maybe ducked accountability a couple of times along the way this year. It's good to see him actually kind of step up and put it on himself. And then you were like, yeah, but all the things you want to blame him for, he thinks he was right.
Yep.
He didn't take accountability for those things. So you kind of wrote the article like, there are things he would change, but it's not the stuff we want.
Yeah, it's not the Couturier scratch. Yeah. It's not playing Couturier 20 minutes a night for the first 4 months of the year. It's not Ayerson getting all the starts. It's not the soft comments, like all that stuff, the stuff that got all the publicity. He's still like, nah, I was right. But I was not totally fair to John Tortorella on Friday in saying that he didn't take any specific accountability, because he did. There were some points and some legitimately interesting points where he did say he thinks he did specific things wrong. Now, it wasn't the big things everyone was talking about, but I do think these two things are important. If you want to read the full story, because we're kind of go into just general details, check it out on allphly.com. It is for diehards only. We'd love to have you as a diehard. We have a ton of written content over the past 4 or 5 days. Les Bowen officially joined the fold as a contributor. Jim Salisbury is doing coverage of the Phillies for us as well as a contributor. And then you have Derek Bodner and Kyle Newbeck covering the hell out of game one of that Sixers playoff series. So if you are a Philly sports fan who likes all the teams, it's a no-brainer. I think it's a no-brainer even if you only like the Flyers, but it's really a no-brainer if you are a 4-4.
You get Charlie, damn it. no, I was walking in today. The Eagles show is in our other studio, the one where we sit at the desk, that one. That's Studio B, little peek behind the curtain.
Hey-o.
And Les Bowen's sitting there at the desk. I'm just walking in, and I'm like, holy shit.
Pretty cool.
I work in the same place as Les Bowen.
Pretty
cool.
This
is really, really cool. If you want to read his stuff, become a diehard. It's a good deal, I think. Let's talk about some of the things Tortorella did take the specific accountability for, because this first one, I guess I find funny more than anything. Didn't practice 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 enough. I would argue it was really a personnel issue more than like a not knowing what to do issue. But you do see like Morgan Frost and Jamie Drysdale out there and you go, well, what the fuck were they doing?
You've never
practiced this. But what did I guess the 3-on-3 really, but they were also outscored considerably at 4-on-4.
Yeah, 5-2 at 4-on-4. I found that on Evolving Hockey and then went back through the schedule and in games. So this doesn't count shootout because they actually weren't horrific in shootouts this year.
They were pretty good, especially to start.
They won some shootouts, but in games decided by overtime in 3-on-3, they won 4 and lost 8. That's a lot of points that they just let fall by the wayside. And John Tortorella basically said, look, sometimes it's hard to practice because you've got other things going on. And sometimes that just may be a couple minutes of the game. But I think it's so important. And I think I failed the team this year that we did not do enough work on that. Look, I do think that some of this is, and not just a personnel issue in terms of choices, some of this is just the limitations of the roster. At 3-on-3 and at 4-on-4, there is more open ice. The players that take advantage of more open ice are the really talented players that the Flyers really don't have. Travis Konecny is probably the only guy who I would say like can really shine in 3-on-3, 4-on-4 when he can use his speed, when there's just less opportunities to slow him down. Beyond that, like Owen Tippett maybe, Morgan Frost maybe, but I don't consider either of them to be super high-end guys.
No.
Whereas all the other teams they're playing pretty much have, you know, like the Rangers have Artemi Panarin. They have Alexis Lafreniere. Like they have these guys who can make things happen easier when there's more space. So I think that's part of it. But I do think that they gave a lot of points away by not executing well at 3-on-3 especially. And I thought it was interesting that John Tortorella took the blame for that and said if he could go back, he would have focused more on that because in retrospect, that might have been the difference between making the playoffs and missing.
And that's very interesting because like we talk about the shootout as a skills competition, but overtime at 3-on-3 now is basically that as well.
Yeah.
It is a puck possession, who can make the creative play, set up a one-timer, set up a tap-in on the back door, like so get a breakaway somehow,
or you just take advantage of another team's mistake. Like, you know, a guy misses the net by a ton, and then it turns into a 2-on-1 the other way.
But yeah, it's, I don't, you know, I did just see a thing where I think it was Danny Briere talking about the last game of 2010, and they practiced the shootout just in case it came down to that. And Lavi told everyone, like, pick a move and let's see how it goes. Yeah. And, like, they end up winning in a shootout. And you're like, well, how much time do you really want to devote? I don't know how much, like, on-ice time I would say, like, oh, John Tortorella. Because you could go 2 months without playing an overtime game. Like, how much on-ice time? But there, it definitely needs to be, like, film study, strategy meetings. Like, I don't know how much. Like, you only get so much practice time throughout the season. They're not that good to begin with.
And the Flyers, notably under Tortorella, if anything, they don't practice as much as other teams.
Exactly.
They seem like they give the players more days off than most other teams do. I heard there were some people in the media room, maybe part of this was a little bit of, you know, they want more practice because they want more time to interview players. But there are people in the media room who, like, I respect, who are very much of the opinion the Flyers could have practiced more. That might have hurt them. That, yeah, I know they were trying to do some load management in a sense and keep the guys fresh, but at times this year, especially in that final month and a half, the process started to slip and maybe practices would have helped. I don't know. I'm kind of ambivalent, but I see the argument. I just think, and the reason why I do buy this as a not insignificant reason for why they didn't make the playoffs, I do believe that a lot of their issue at 4-on-4 and especially 3-on-3 is talent driven. However, I don't think that means you just punt it. I think in a sense, if you have the talent deficiencies, you need to be more strategic and spend more time on it to try to, you know, taper over some of those deficiencies. Like the Flyers don't have a super talented roster. So what do? They made, and we're going to get to this in a second, they made some structural changes in terms of their 5-on-5 style, and it made them a better 5-on-5 team that was able to kind of get around some of the weaknesses they have as a club. I don't think they did that at 3-on-3. They just, like, I feel like if you have a stacked team, then you really don't need to practice three-on-three. Because then it's just like, like Connor McDavid, go out there and do Connor McDavid things. We don't need to practice this. You're just faster than everyone in the league. If you don't have those guys, though, then I think practice does benefit even more because you need to get by on set plays. You need to get by on knowing where the other two guys are at all times. You need to get by because you have these pairings like that just know. Like, they just know where each other are. And I don't think the Flyers ever got to that point. You saw that in the Frost-Drysdale turnover that led to the game winner against the Islanders. Obviously, that was a huge game. Maybe if you practice 3-on-3 more, maybe that handoff goes cleaner. The Flyers win that game. Maybe they're in the playoffs. So I think Tortorella is correct in saying that practicing 3-on-3 especially might have made a difference. And it'll be interesting to see next year if they do it more.
It definitely will be. And I mean, I just think of it was Drysdale's first or second game, and it's just TK screaming, just skate it. Like, that was the strategy. Fast guy, please just take it. We don't really have a plan. The other thing that Tortorella kind of took some accountability for is the team was not prepared for the stylistic shift. And we mentioned so much, like, man, they just don't seem to be able to get their transition game going.
Yeah.
Once, you know, and Tortorella said, like, listen, I know what happens. Like, the games get harder. They get tighter checking as the playoffs approach. Teams start to play that more, as you say, like that half court style.
Yeah.
There's just not going to be 3-on-1s all the time.
Yeah.
And that is what happened to this team. And you saw what happened to the offense. It went away.
Yeah.
It disappeared.
Yeah. And this is a problem that, and again, in no way, shape, or form am I letting Rocky Thompson off the hook, but this is a problem that manifests itself in the power play as well, because so much of their offense at 5-on-5, the dangerous part of their offense, was centered around the rush, centered around transition offense, counterattacks, quick strike. On the power play, you can't do that. You have to set up in the half court and you have to create on the cycle. Obviously, they couldn't do that all year. The power play was trash. But I think also they struggled to do it at 5-on-5. That when they got into a cycle, like, they could possess the puck and they could create shots, but they rarely scored goals.
Let's their one line that was like a good forechecking line, you know, as I said, after, you know, game 82, it's the line with almost no chance to score. I like those guys a lot.
Great fourth line.
But on a good team, that's a fourth line. Yeah. Fourth lines typically don't score much, you know? And like, that was seemed to be the only line that could consistently get in on the forecheck. And like, did they ever score? No. Good shift for a fourth line. Yeah. You're not just killing time out there.
Yeah.
But ultimately, if that's the only one that can consistently be in the offensive zone, you're not going to score that much.
Yeah. I just think that for this, it's going to be interesting to see how they address it, because it's clearly something that Tortorella has identified as a problem. And I think he's correct in that creating offense in the offensive zone on the cycle is an issue. It's absolutely something that you need to work on. The thing is that I don't think they want to stop, and rightfully so. I don't think they want to stop playing the rush game. I think they realize that, particularly for this group of guys, for this team, guys like Konechny, guys like Tippett, even guys like Sanheim and York, like, this style works well for the group they have, and I do not think they're going to stop doing it. However, as John Tortorella points out, it gets harder to base almost your entire offense around that type of offense creation in the final third, the final quarter of the year, and then in the playoffs too. It just gets harder because, number one, teams do buckle down more. But number two, and this is a big part of just the reason why defenses get better as the year goes on, teams just get sharper. Like, at the start of the year, everybody's discombobulated. Nobody's really in a rhythm. There's more mistakes. There's more opportunities for 2-on-1s, for 3-on-2s, because people are making more mistakes. After 65 games of playing the same system every other day in games and getting to know your teammates and getting to know where everybody stands in a neutral zone, like, and not just everybody knows what a neutral zone forecheck is, but like, knowing if you're Travis Sanheim, now you know exactly where Cam York is going to be because you know the way he plays very, very well. Because teams get sharper as the year goes on, they make fewer glaring defensive mistakes. The mistakes are still going to happen, but the degree of a mistake you need to make in order to give up a 3-on-2 is significantly higher than like the degree of a mistake you need to make to like blow a coverage for a half a second in the defensive zone.
Yeah.
And the thing is that you're just not seeing as many of those big neutral zone mistakes or big forechecking mistakes that leads to the other team going the other way in transition with an odd man rush. They just happen less later in the year. And because they happen less, if you want to keep scoring, you have to be better at creating off the cycle. The Flyers in their final 13 games, 8 of those games, they score 2 or fewer goals. That's not going to cut it. And I know they lack high-end talent, but even with the talent they have, that's not going to cut
it. You can't not score.
Yeah.
Like,
you got to score some
someone
goals.
Someone has to score. You know, I'm just thinking back to like Charlie loves the Dallas Stars this year as a potential Stanley Cup pick. I'm checking out the Bet Park Sportsbook app right now. Plus 850. There's only 4 teams listed ahead of them. They are one of the favorites to win the Stanley Cup this year. And the reason I was thinking about that is the like just how tight, how much tighter teams are this time of year as opposed to early. Like early in the season, didn't the Flyers beat the Stars for 3 shorthanded goals?
Yeah,
I guarantee
did.
You, they don't give up 3 shorthanded goals this playoff. Like, and that's just kind of the way it is. But yeah, maybe you want to get in on those Dallas Stars because they have tightened things up. Well, you got to do it over at that Bet Park Sportsbook app. You get in the zone with Bet Park Sportsbook app because money is in the moments, and you can win big with all day action. If you win your first $10 bet at Bet Parks, you can earn $125 in sports bonus bets. That's right. You play for fun. You love to win. You bet. Download the app and play along with us. Must be 21 or older. Please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. I'm like, we're going to go over some of these odds. I wanted to wait to do this until we got to there.
You've been pumping up the Dallas Stars for me for like weeks. You know what's going to happen is they're going to get swept by the Golden Knights.
That's why I'm doing it.
It's a really tough. Like, I still like the Stars as my cup pick, but man, that's a tough matchup.
After
you're getting the defending champs with Mark Stone back in the lineup.
You really screwed all of us saying, I'm hoping all these high-end teams with the great talent like make runs and it's not like a bunch of stupid upsets. I was like, oh, thanks. You just put the Islanders in the conference final again, Charlie. Really appreciate that.
I have so much power.
Before we get to some of the playoff stuff, though, so I'm watching the DNVR post game last night, and I'm thinking Eric Lacroix gets a super chat question. He played for Colorado for a while, longtime NHLer. He's one of their co-hosts out there. And he gets this super chat question about, like, Alexander Georgiev was obviously bad. Does anyone say anything? Like, because it's always that rule. No one says anything. Like, you don't say shit to the goalie. Yeah. You just don't do it. He's the goalie. And he brings up an interesting point about locker room dynamics. I want you to listen to this, and then I'll tell you what I was thinking about it.
$2 from Justin, who says, Eric, do players say anything to Beds or Georgiev?
I bet Nathan MacKinnon does.
Here's what I'll say. You'll never say anything publicly. Have I been in locker rooms that are championship type locker rooms? Yes, and they say it right to your face. Unacceptable. You got to be better. And I've seen it where I've been in shitty teams where nothing's said, but it's all said behind in the back of the bus, not telling the guy to his face. You know what I mean? So again, there is stuff, and then coaches are coaches. But if you have a good relationship with your core, which I think Bednar does, I know Bednar does, then you know what? It's a partnership, and yeah, there's things you can talk about with your leadership group and about where the direction of the team's going. And I'm sure that, again, it's such a fragile thing, playoffs, because you lose a game, it's the end of the world. You lose 2, you're in a deep hole. So yeah, I'm sure that it can be talked about a little bit and say, hey, what are your thoughts? You know what I mean? And that's okay. Doesn't mean that they'll go with it, but they sure can talk about it. Absolutely.
Now, the end part there, maybe you can be like, maybe there should be a little more back and forth between Coots and Torts. But it was really the first part of it that that I really zeroed in on. Now, this is not to say, and I know like everyone's going to take it this way, but like not to say bad things about the Claude Giroux era and his leadership style or whatever. But I just remember back to, you know, they go on that 10-game losing streak and Jake Voracek says, yeah, we just had to get drunk and sort it all out and just like have that real, like, I don't know if everyone talked about each other, like behind the back, like Eric, infers to there, but like, it just seems as if everyone's been a little too buddy-buddy in that locker room. And I've said that. Like, yeah, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be all that close of friends because everyone's fucking up a lot. You know, like, everyone should probably be a little mad at each other. And I feel like John Tortorella, while doing things like calling the team soft and the Felix Sandstrom thing, which he then apologized, like, maybe it's not this calculated in his head, but he is kind of preparing them for what culture isn't just like we play hard every night. It's we have to have these conversations. You're going to get called out sometimes. Not everything's going to be like real happy. You know, yeah. It's not just, oh, yeah, well, the boys love each other. Like, nah, sometimes the boys got to get in each other's faces. And maybe that element has been missing, isn't part of like just this overall team's culture, because the guys who have been here together a while are all kind of like, hey, man, we've been doing this a long time together. The new guys, maybe they're not comfortable to say that kind of stuff yet. I feel like John Tortorella maybe kind of like taking it upon himself to be like, this is the way it's going to be if we're going to be great. Am I just saying shit?
I mean, I don't think you're barking up the wrong tree. I do think that what's probably happening as a result, like if John Tortorella's antics over the final month and a half, and I think they go back further than that because he's been John Tortorella forever, but also for the entire season, he was pushing buttons all year. If that ultimately works and the team doesn't ever quit on him, they don't ever tune him out, the reason why it's going to work is because the guys will all band together kind of in opposition to him.
That's
like a very Herb Brooks style thing where he's going to make himself the villain, but the villain that they hate but respect. It's kind of like, you know, Jack Nicholson, like, you need me on that wall. You want me on that wall from A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
It's that same concept where it's like, yeah, we all hate him, but we all know he's good at what he does and he's trying to get the most out of us. And we're all going to rally around the fact that he pisses us off, but we're not going to stop listening to what he tells us to do on the ice. That's how this all works. Now, whether that ultimately ends up being the case, I don't know. Frank Saravalli did an interesting interview on Nasty Knuckles, I believe it was Friday, where he, and I've hinted at this as well, you know, in our conversations, that like you hear things that, you know, there are players on the team that don't love Torts, which again, not a shock, but that the Couturier stuff could have played a role in the late season collapse. Frank Saravalli more or less said that he talks to players on the team and he's intrigued to see how this is going to go next year, because a lot of guys are not feeling real good about John Tortorella being their coach right now. We've talked about this a ton on the show about like, look, even if they're not wrong about Torts maybe going too far too in bad. Certain situations, it's kind of like too bad. You sort of like, and I know it's not all the same guys, but you kind of like, after
I'm still here and I have to deal with it, so do you.
Like, after doing this to multiple coaches, like, I'm sorry, you lost your get out of jail free card. I don't care that John Tortorella is insufferable. You got to play for him. Deal with it.
Yeah, like the captain of this team was on the one that had, you know, Lavi fired after three fucking games. I'm done with this.
Yeah.
I don't care if the coach is Satan. Like, deal with it. Fucking deal with it. And like, listen, I said a couple of shows ago, I don't think he can be the coach because his decision making is going to cost them in must-win games.
It's fair.
Like, if
it's
you think in a must-win game, sitting your fourth and eighth leaders in both goals and points a game amongst the forwards when you have to score multiple goals, like, if that's how you coach big games, nah, sorry, I can't have you when like we're good again. But that's not to say like you need to quit on him. No, you actually need to play even harder for this guy, because I'm done with this conversation.
Yeah, and what I've said from the get-go, because this is what I had always been hearing, in addition to the fact that you were hearing rumors that like there are players who are just done with Torts or sick of them. They think this is bullshit. The other thing I always heard when I would talk to people in and around the organization is that, hey, like, he ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Danny and Jonesy and Dan Hilferty, they love the guy and they're not going to get rid of him just because a few players might not be happy playing under Torts. And that, I do think, and looking at this in the optimistic way, because I don't want the Flyers to quit on their coach. I want to cover a good hockey team. And if they quit on their coach, the Flyers will immediately become a bad hockey team, and that will not be fun to cover. So I don't want this to happen. And one of the reasons why, if you had You put me up against the wall and you're like, do you think that this is going to be a toxic environment next year? And do you think the team is going to just tune out Tortorella? I would say no. And the reason more than anything as to why I don't think they will,
it's not going to work,
is because I think the players realize that, like, the front office and the leadership of the organization are going to pick Torts over them, and they don't want to leave. Like, they, as much as I suspect some guys on this team are thoroughly sick of John Tortorella's shit, they are not thoroughly sick of being a Flyer. They like being on this team. They love the group. They love the guys. And like, being on the Flyers, in terms of the perks, there are a lot of friggin' perks.
You're on the list of guys who could one day be president and or GM. I mean, that right there. You know?
There are a lot of perks. And I think that given the offseason to cool down, because, like, John Tortorella has said, I don't do exit interviews after the year. I do them a little bit later. And he hasn't really, like, specified the exact reason. I'm pretty sure I know the reason. Yeah. It's because he needs to give these guys a month away from him before they can think and speak rationally to him about their season. Because right now, they probably want to take a baseball bat to his head.
I just feel like, no, I'm not doing it. We're not doing this right now, John. Like, I can't. Nah, it's been a long year for everyone.
But I do think that if I had to guess, I think that given a few months to cool down, I think cooler heads will prevail, because I think the players will recognize that even if they don't love this guy, number one, he's a good coach. But number two, it's not going to work. He is going to be here. So if I want to be here, I got to deal with it. And I think they will ultimately decide that.
And I think a lot of people right now, after watching the Phillies the last couple days, like, damn, I want to be there. I want to be at Citizens Bank Park. Well, you got some time. They're going on the road right now. Hey, maybe you want to catch them on the road at San Diego, at Anaheim. Could be a lot worse.
I mean, San Diego is apparently beautiful.
Could be a lot worse.
One of my places I have not been yet, but I want to go to. Heard it's gorgeous.
If you're going
to
wait till they come home, it's not till the beginning of next month. But no matter when you want to go, you got to go with Game Time, because Game Time is the place for last-minute ticket deals. With killer last-minute deals, the all-in pricing where you see everything up front, there's no hidden fees or anything that hits you at the very end, and views from your seat, plus the lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. You get the last minute deals. You can save up to 60% off buying last minute for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. Plus the flash deals. You can save even more with exclusive in-app deals on select seats ahead of the game or event. So snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PHLY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem code PHLY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. And man, maybe you want to check out Sixers playoff game coming home. Hey, that game one, a little disappointing. Got to get that juice going in the Farg.
Hopefully they get game two. I am absolutely going to be using Game Time a ton this summer, because I cannot wait to go to some Phillies games. I am pumped for Phillies baseball this summer.
I've been to a few already. It has been a great time. And you can have a great time with Game Time. Don't forget that PHLY code. We're going to get to... So that's kind of the John Tortorella discussion for the day. I mean, it never ends. You know, Charlie, we got tweets today. We put out the schedule. They're like, oh my God, what are you going to talk about all offseason?
Do you realize the team we covered?
We're 35 minutes in and we've done one topic.
Yep.
We've done one thing. It's just the Flyers,
The idea that the Flyers are going to be boring all summer,
it's
like,
insane.
What organization do you think we cover? They're going to be doing something crazy every other week, if not every week.
But although the Flyers are out, I do want to talk some Stanley Cup playoffs. As I alluded to earlier, we're going to do some predictions. And I think, I have the Hurricanes winning in my bracket thing on NHL, so I guess I'm going to have to go with them.
Okay.
But let's just take a look at the series so far. So Rangers Caps, Rangers are up 1-0, and obviously it's all because Matt Rempe mania is running wild.
Of course he scored in the first game. Of course he did.
He had to.
I mean, it's perfect. The narrative is perfect.
It's truly incredible. Like, when I see you responding to Dr. Evil Gritty, I'm like, this is how I know it was a good one, because he got Charlie. Or it's just Charlie responding to himself. I'm not totally positive.
Oh, my God.
It's not Charlie. He assures me. But I, this is one of those series. Like, it's for me, it's either the Rangers or the Hurricanes, because I look at coming out of the East at the very least. Because I'm looking at the Caps and the Isles, Charlie, and these are teams that needed somewhere between 80 and 82 games to overtake the Flyers. Now, the Flyers dramatically overachieved this year. Also, they are not good. Like, they were not good. They were, like, there were times where they kind of looked like they were getting, and then some injuries. They
the second half version of the Flyers was in no way, shape, or form a playoff caliber team.
No, they were not. That was a bad team. Yeah. And it took that long for these other bad teams to catch them. That means they're no good either. So I'm looking at these.
Not wrong.
Like, the Islanders, they're not good, but they make everything a fist fight. Like, it's just like, yeah, I'm just going to throw rocks at you, man. And so the Rangers, or the Hurricanes could sweep them. And it's like, yeah, they're real banged up, though. You know, the Caps are just not good.
Yeah.
Like, the Caps are not good hockey
team. No, they're a bad team.
It's very funny that they got in ahead of the Penguins to me.
I mean, I find it hilarious, yes, actually.
But, like, if you had to pick between these two teams, the Rangers and Hurricanes, because I think they should be the runaway favorites in the East right now, who are you going with?
I'm going with the Hurricanes because I really, like, their big problem last playoff was they could possess the puck, they couldn't finish. Last playoff, they did not have Andrei Svechnikov. Svechnikov was injured. He tore his ACL. He's back. He gives them a legitimate weapon. And then, obviously, they traded for Jake Guentzel. And ever since they traded for Jake Guentzel, that top line of Carolina's has been supercharged. They are taking apart teams. And now they have a guy to finish on all of the chances and all the zone time that they've always been able to generate. It's not that I think negatively of the Rangers. I especially think very highly of Peter Laviolette. This is year one Lavi. He does this. He did it in Philly. He did it in Nashville. Like, I think the Capitals were a team that, like, they should have fallen off the cliff 3 or 4 years ago. Laviolette was able to stave that off for longer than it should have been because he's a really good coach. So I have all the respect for Peter Laviolette. And if the Rangers beat the Hurricanes, I think a lot of it's going to be Lavi. It's going to be Lavi just squeezing as much out of this team as he possibly can. But I think the Hurricanes are a significantly better 5-on-5 team. And I think their penalty kill is good enough, maybe not to stop the Rangers' power play, because it's a great power play, but I think it's good enough to slow them down to the point where they can win a tough series. But it's going to be a toss-up. And, like, look, who knows? Maybe the Islanders pull off an upset and they end up playing the Rangers. That would also be a fun series just in terms of, you know, New York versus New York. But I think the Rangers would cruise. Rangers Hurricanes would be a blast to watch, and I think it's going to be really tight. I personally would go with the Hurricanes, but would it all shock me if the Rangers do it?
No, I'm picking the Hurricanes to win it all, and I'm like listening. I'm like, man, do I want to switch? No, I've already filled out the bracket, but yeah, and part of me just wants the Hurricanes to do it. One, because they've been knocking on the door for so long. They've been the sexy pick for like 6 years to the point that they're not anymore. Steph Driver's probably like enough with them already.
Yeah, right.
Like, she's probably cut them out. But I'm just looking at that. And I wouldn't say the Hurricanes lack talent, but they're not the Colorado Avalanche.
No, right? They're not.
And I feel like they might be closest to the Flyers model.
Yeah.
And I want to see it actually work. Like, hypothetically, it works, you know, just like the Moneyball Oakland A's. Right. Like, hypothetically, this thing is right. It's just like, you got to win eventually.
Yeah.
I would like to see this work because I feel like the Flyers are kind of headed potentially down that path.
Yeah.
And I would like to see it pay off.
My hope is that Michkov is ultimately a better player than anybody on the Canes right now. But, like, yeah, the Canes are a team where, you know, they've got Sebastian Aho, great player. Not a superstar, great player. Andrei Svechnikov, you know, he had 52 points in 59 games, and that was despite the fact that he was in the first half of the year not at 100% because he was coming back from the knee injury. He's a great player. I wouldn't consider him a superstar. He's a great player. Same with Jake Guentzel. Great player, not quite a superstar. Yeah. So they are a team. Jacob Slavin, same thing. Amazing defenseman. I would not consider him to be a star on the same level as like Cale Makar or Adam Fox, you know, or Miro Heiskanen or Quinn Hughes. Like, he's not them. He's real good, but he's this. So they're a team that is built around a core of guys that are all like, and I think all four of them are better than Travis Konecny.
I was going to say, but they're in that realm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you're not going to agree with me on this next one. I'm just starting to feel bad for the Leafs.
I will never feel bad for the Leafs.
How many times can you just like, it is just great. They run into the Bruins again, which is always funny. But they're down 1-0. No one knows what the hell's going on with Willie Nylander. Yeah. Like, it doesn't look like he's going to be in the lineup again for game two. No one has a clue. And it's just like, I know that they're insufferable, and because they, you know, are in the hockey capital, their media basically is national media for the league. They are the Cowboys. They really are. They're the Cowboys that think they're the Yankees. And it's like, no, you're not.
Yeah, that's actually really
true. No, you're not. Yeah. You're the Mets. But like, those are good hockey loving people up in Toronto. And like, they just can't get anything. It's a constant just like getting hit over the head with a baseball bat.
So here's the thing with the Leafs right now. I picked them to win the series. I am rooting for them in large part. Because fuck Boston.
All right.
I can't root for a Boston team. Are you kidding me?
I hate both so much. I don't know which way you're going.
Yeah, but it, like, I'm annoyed by Leafs fans.
Okay.
Leafs fans bother me.
Yeah.
The concept of Boston bothers me.
Yeah, all right.
That wins out. However, I cannot deny it would be very funny because Brad Treliving comes in as GM, and his big thing all year, last offseason and during the season, is that, look, we might not win as many games in the regular season, but I added players and I've changed our way so that we're better suited for the playoffs. That was the whole thing. It's that, you know, we're going to be a better playoff team. And it would be absolutely hilarious if after all that, they go and like get swept in the first round. It would be real funny.
It would be. You're right. It would be. It's just like, man, I don't think like their roster is way better. Like, I don't think they're this soft team that people said that, like, I don't understand why they haven't had playoff success. And it just kind of seems like luck of the draw. But since they're that team that gets that kind of coverage, it's, well, no, obviously something's afoot. There's a stink to this. Maybe they lost 4 out of 7.
Maybe.
You know, because that happens to everyone.
They've lost some really good teams, and they've lost in some really close series. They had the one series where John Tavares gets knocked out in the first game. Like, they've had some bad luck. But by the same token, at some point,
you just have to win.
You got to get it done.
Like,
go to a
conference final.
Yeah.
It's like the Isles have been to two.
They finally won a playoff round.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I guess this year is supposed to be the next step. Boston obviously has a great record, but you look at their roster, especially down the middle, and you're like, you can't help but think they're doing it with smoke and mirrors to a degree. And I'm not saying they don't have great players. They have really good wingers.
Excellent goaltending.
Yeah,
obviously.
Goaltending.
Like Pasternak, Marchand, Pasta.
But like Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle are their two best centers, and they're winning a lot. It still blows my mind, and it speaks how good of a coach Jim Montgomery is as well. Again,
my guy.
That's your guy.
I like being right. I will say, like, I always knew it was going to be Tortorella or Tockett, but I really wanted Montgomery.
Yeah, I wanted Montgomery too, and he's showing that he's a really good coach up there. But I look at the respective rosters and I say, like, Toronto should win this year.
Yes.
But then you watch game one, and you're like, they're not going to win this series.
Oh, my God. It's just so damn funny. Then there's Panthers Lightning. This is just a weird one because I look at the Lightning as like this boom or bust team. Like, they have that top end talent. And if those guys go off, like, they're very difficult to beat.
Yeah.
But it just seems like they're not what they were. And they obviously don't have that depth because that's what happens. Eventually guys get paid. And in a cap league, you can't really keep it together like that.
Yeah.
That's what's happened to them. They're still pretty damn good. But the Panthers are, they're that team you look at and like the hockey men look at and go, they're built for the playoffs.
Yeah. And they're just loaded. Like,
yeah.
They're
really fucking good.
There's an element with Florida too. And I don't know this would be a nice question to ask, like, a former player, if the players recognize this. Florida is a team this year, this playoff run. Obviously, they made it to the Stanley Cup final last year. Yeah. It was kind of a surprise run. But the year before, they were President's Trophy champs. So it wasn't like it was a shock that they got going at the right time. But I do wonder with a team like Florida, they are a club right now that is absolutely loaded, but over the next year or two is going to have to lose some guys. Like, this is, in a sense, and I'm not saying they're going to be bad, but this is the best I think they're going to be. You see, you have Sam Reinhardt, who was awesome this year. He's a pending UFA. I think there's a very good chance that they just will not have the cap space to be able to bring him back. You know, you've got, obviously, they traded for some guys like Tarasenko. He's a UFA. Like, Nick Cousins is a quality depth player. He's a UFA. He'll probably get paid from somewhere. Aaron Ekblad's a UFA in 2 years. Brandon Montour is a UFA this year. Like, they are going to get gutted. And I really wonder if that is, if that's used in a locker room as a motivating factor in terms of, like, this is our last shot with these guys, yeah, that we're going to be this stacked. Like, we got to get it done, because for this team, there is no tomorrow. Not in the sense that they couldn't win it all later, like in a few years, but, like, they're never going to be this talented again.
Yeah. And, like, it'll take some sort of retool, some rearranging. It won't be this group.
Yeah.
And, like, you go on a run like last year's, and it's like, God damn, like, and look at the defensemen they lost off of that. Like, look at Boston, what they're doing. It's not as if it can't be done. It can't be replicated. Like, there's three guys from their top six that aren't there anymore, and yeah, they're right back. And obviously Boston, they have no centers. They're right back. So it's,
I think Florida is as good of a choice as any to win this thing.
I agree.
Not even the series, but, like, to win the cup.
I agree. I like them a lot. I just think, because of the first round matchups being, like, we talked about how, you know, the Conn Smythe trophy is like the war of attrition trophy.
Yeah.
Oh, you have two working feet, you win. the Rangers and Canes are, like, basically playing one less series than everyone else in my mind.
Yeah. But no, I mean, Florida, I feel good about their chances to break through against the Lightning this time. I just think they're a deeper team than they were before. I think they're a smarter team. I think they can play multiple styles in a way they couldn't a couple years ago when they were only we play fast. Now, I think that style could have won. I don't think it could have won if they don't have Joel Quenneville coaching it. And obviously they don't have him as coach anymore. Like, this style, I think, works better for the guys they have now. And it's probably better served for the playoffs. I think you can win run and gun, but you have to have a really, really good coach at the helm.
Yeah.
And Quenneville is in hockey limbo, maybe for the rest of his career. We shall see. But this style, I think, is better served to take down the Lightning than trying to outchance Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos and Braden Point.
Probably not, like, the best strategy.
Yeah, it might not work.
Before we go out west, I got to tell you about my friends at Olipop. Olipop is the world's first functional soda with a classic soda taste and the benefits of plant-based fiber, prebiotics, and other botanical ingredients to support gut health. Olipop is a new kind of soda with only 2 to 5 grams of sugar and 9 grams of fiber per can. 2 out of every 3 Americans say they suffer from digestive issues, and 95% of Americans don't get the daily recommended amount of fiber. Olipop is tackling both these issues with a drink that tastes just like soda. Prebiotic fiber is the food source for the beneficial probiotic bacteria in your gut, and Olipop has 9 grams of prebiotic fiber in every can that can help support your digestive health. And something I'll tell you about Olipop that they won't put in the copy here, it makes one hell of a mixer. Olipop was our presenting sponsor for the Game 82 watch party. I bought a little bit of liquor, tried a few different things, you know, tried the cola with some spiced rum, tried the strawberry vanilla with some tequila. That was excellent. And the strawberry vanilla is one of the 2 flavors you can get at the Wawa launch. That's right.
Ayo.
Olipop's available at Wawa, and the 2 flavors they're debuting are the root beer and the strawberry vanilla. I'm a fan of both. But you can also get Olipop online at drinkolipop.com. And when you do that, use promo code PHLY20 for 20% off your next order of Olipop. The discount only applies to one-time orders, not subscriptions. Olipop is sold online at drinkolipop.com as well as Amazon and available in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide, including Wawa, Target, Sprouts, Wegmans, ShopRite, and GoPuff. Me personally, I think you got to go to drinkolipop.com. Use that PHLY20 code for 20% off.
Hey-o.
Get yourself some good mixers for the summer, man.
Make us look good.
Yeah. Come on.
If you're gonna buy it, why not make Charlie and Bill look good?
Yeah, it would really make me happy if you did this for us. Let's take a look out west real quick. The one series I want to talk about, Avs Jets.
Oh man, that's gonna
7-6.
We deserve 7 games of that series.
Oh man. That was a lot of fun last night. And as you know, I was watching the DNVR post game, our friends out there. I'll tell you, I love them, but there seems to be this feeling like, oh man, if we just get like a couple of saves, we have this. What's more likely? Georgiev or whoever starts making saves and goaltending has been their weakness all year, or the guy who's going to walk away with the Vezina, he starts making some saves. Because you just got 6 on him and lost.
Yeah.
And like, you expose like their strength. What happens when it becomes their strength again? Like, I love the Avs. Man, last night, not even just the goaltending, really the fact that they went toe-to-toe, played the Avs kind of game and won, makes me think, what happens when they play their game? Because they swept them this year. I think they're 3-0 against the Avs. Blew them out.
It's a reasonable question. And Winnipeg, I give Winnipeg a lot of credit because I thought that team was cooked.
Yeah.
Like going into the season, I thought their days of being a legitimate contender were over.
I couldn't believe when they re-signed Scheifele and Hellebuck.
Yeah. But to give them credit, they stuck with it. You know, obviously they lost Blake Wheeler, so they had some changes. Adam Lauer becomes the captain, which was an interesting choice, but I think the right choice because I think that one of my big issues with Winnipeg for years, and it's still an issue I have with them, it's that their top-end players have absolutely no interest in playing any defense at all. Like, Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, they just don't give a fuck about defense. And I don't think it sets a very good example for the rest of the roster. So I liked when they named Lowry the captain because it was like, okay, like that's a guy who the young guys could be like, I should play like him because I can't score 100 points like Mark Scheifele. And I can't like, I don't think it does a lot for your team's accountability when your star players are just like, well, I know like we have a hard ass as our coach, but like, I just ain't going to play defense because I don't feel like it. But I do think they made the right move going with a captain who actually does set a good example. I'm surprised they're this good, but they did it all year. They are this good. And they reminded everybody in game one that they're not a fluke. This is a really talented team that can score a lot and has by far, in my mind, by far the best goalie in the NHL right now. And that's not shitting on guys like Shesterkin and Sorokin. Like there's some other real good goalies in the NHL. I think Hellebuck is on a different team.
Hellebuck's probably going to be the unanimous winner of the Vezina. Like,
very possible.
He's going to walk away with this thing.
Very possible.
Like, Shesterkin had the bad start to the year. Like, Sorokin is awesome. Also, they went with Varley a lot down the stretch.
Like,
the good goalies didn't have the best years, and then there's him with a 940. Like, oh, guess who's going to win? The other series, Preds Canucks last night, just a real fun swing late in that game. Just like, all of a sudden, 12 seconds go by, and it's like, oh, different game. My favorite thing about this, I think it is an elite jersey matchup.
Yeah.
I just really like the way the colors look.
Yeah, I went full-fledged commitment to the bit here and picked the Preds because I'm going down with the Vancouver isn't an amazing team ship. I do, however, think, I mean, a big reason why I picked the Preds is I think I might have picked the Preds against anybody. I just think they're rolling right now. They're driving play. They're playing a fun style. They have a really good goalie. I know Saros wasn't amazing last night. I really didn't like that Elias Lindholm goal. But I fully trust that he's going to turn back into UC Saros at some point in the series. Hopefully it's game two for my pick. But it's not even that I don't think Vancouver is good. I think they're a very good team. I think they improved their underlying process dramatically in the second half to the point where I don't think that this is just like a PDO-driven fluke. However, they are a team that had an insanely high shooting percentage all year, and that can be a fickle thing. And if they go cold at the wrong time, the Predators are a team I think that is good enough and they are hot enough that they could pull the upset. I picked that because I wanted to pick an upset, and I was probably going to pick the Preds to upset whoever they face in the first round. It just happened to be Vancouver. What game one did remind us all, though, is, and this is the Preds' weakness, and it's the Vancouver strength, is Vancouver just has the quick strike talent that they can turn a game. Like the Preds can play a great game for 50 minutes, and then in 2 minutes, Vancouver can win the game. We're 12 seconds.
Yeah, Vancouver is freaking fun to watch.
Yeah, they are.
They have that really good high-end talent, but I tell you, all the Preds got to do, just take away a concert at the Sphere again, and they'll go on a 17-game undefeated streak or something. The two series that I believe start tonight have not begun yet.
Right.
Vegas and Dallas and the Kings and the Oilers. That Vegas-Dallas series,
I mean, that's a battle of
juggernauts. That's a lot of fun.
That's a battle of juggernauts.
I have the Oilers coming out of the West.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just
feels
think
like
it's time.
Like
it's,
feels like McDavid's time.
He's going to do it. Like, it's going to happen. Yeah. He's that fucking good. And I don't think there's a great West team to stop them the way there has been.
Really?
Like when,
see, because I think they're...
I think they're all good.
I think there are a lot of really good teams. And maybe, like, my disagreement with you is that I think that because the West is so deep that you look at it and you're like, well, there's not one team that's head and shoulders above everyone else. And I think that's true. But I don't think that means that none of these teams are great. I just think the West has a lot of great teams this year.
All right, that's fair.
Like, I think that the West top-end teams, they just have way more top-end teams than the East does. And I don't think it's particularly close. But, like, Dallas, Vegas, Colorado, Winnipeg, Edmonton. Like, all of those teams I view as, like, legitimately great teams. The Kings, not really. The Canucks, I think, are a step below the teams I think that are great. The Preds are a team that is on a really great run, but you look at their roster,
it's not a great team.
And it's like, it's not a great team. It doesn't seem like they should be playing as well as they've been playing for the last 2 months or so. So, but I think there are five teams in the West that I think are legitimately great teams. That might be like five of the eight best teams in hockey. So I kind of disagree with you there, but I just think that this Vegas Stars series is going to be fascinating because you have two of the best teams playing.
That's like those teams are all like, if you want to call them great, very good, whatever. Like, two of them are playing each other right off the bat.
Yeah, so one of them's
so
gone.
So one of them's out.
Yeah.
And I just I don't see anyone like that Colorado team that won a couple years ago. That was just, they were an unstoppable juggernaut.
Nobody's that good.
They were going to win the cup from the day the season started.
I agree.
All the way until they raised the cup. And I don't see that team. Maybe there's just three teams that are that good, and so you don't see it like that. But I don't think any of them are like these bulldozers. So my prediction is going to be Canes over Oilers. How are you going to finish it up, Charlie?
I am sticking with my prediction from the start of the year, which was Canes versus Stars.
Canes, Stars. There you go. All right. So we both think maybe that PDO bender is going to chill a little bit that the Canucks have been on. This is your problem. I'm not starting with Canucks Twitter. This has been your problem all year.
I know.
Listen, whether we're talking about the Flyers, whether we're talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs, whatever it is, we could all take some time to chill, and there's no better way to chill than with an ice-cold Coors Light. So whether you're freaking out about who's going to be in net for Colorado or is this Connor McDavid's year, you need to find the Blue Mountains in your fridge and enjoy a beer as cold as the Rockies. Because when everything surrounding your favorite hockey team is on fire, sometimes you just got to chill. And nothing's more on fire than those Stanley Cup playoffs. I just didn't rewrite the last line. I got to come up with something here. When you choose to rise above it all, choose chill. Choose Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/PHLYHockey. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right, before we get out of here, let's see. Let's look at this. I'm going to do a mailbag question of the day, and I didn't run this by Brent, so we might not have this from like last week, but it's a question from Chris Krochak that I've been meaning to get to, and I think today might be a good time as we kind of take a step back and examine this plan, Charlie.
Yeah, we're chilling a little bit.
Yeah, we're chilling. He asked this last week, if the rumors are true that Walker is open to resigning here, and if that is, would you? His impact can't be denied, and this is why I said I was going to mention the Sean Walker earlier. Maybe we do awards predictions at some point closer to like the NHL awards or whatever. Sean Walker deserves one fifth place vote for the Norris Trophy. One fifth place vote, Charlie. The PHWA votes on this. Now listen, Look at the Flyers' blue line and penalty kill before and after. I don't think there's any denying he's one of the most effective defensemen in the league this year.
He was real good.
I realize there are like five superstars that could get this vote. The guy was real damn good. He kind of held this team together, it looks like. That said, I'm not interested.
I know, based on my conversations, that there definitely was interest on the part of Sean Walker to return to Philly. He loved it in Philly. His style of play fits perfectly here under Tortorella, under what they want the defenseman to do. So there's that. I don't think the Flyers have completely shut the door. However, I go back to what Danny Briere said on Friday. I pushed him near the end of the press conference about which prospects does he think are the closest to making an NHL impact next season to start the year. As I mentioned, you know, last year, like, everybody knew Tyson Forrester was going to have a real shot. Zamula had the waiver thing, so he was going to have a leg up on everybody else. Then Brink obviously crashes the door down unexpectedly in camp. Which players does he think can do that for next season, or in position to potentially do that at camp next year? And he notably said that he really doesn't think there are many forwards, if any, who are ready to take that leap. He said, like, Tuomo Moala, they think he needs another year. I guess somebody like Desnoyer can surprise, but, like, he didn't have a great year, especially from a scoring standpoint. Still going on. The Phantoms are going to the playoffs, so we'll see. Maybe they take a step in more meaningful games. But right now, not many forwards. Defenseman, though, he said quite a few names. He's like, obviously, Jenning and Addert. You know, Andre, he mentioned. Granz, he pointed out, you know, is closer closer than we might think. Little Helge. If they have four defensemen down in the minors who they think are close, I don't know how you bring back Sean Walker, because you're going to need some spots for those guys. Like, you're going to need, like, Ronnie Addert is going to be waiver.
He's going to be in Zamula's shoes.
And, like, that's a spot that if you don't want to lose him, if you still think he's part of this, then why are you going to go out and sign a guy who justifiably would be getting every night top 4 minutes? He deserves it. I just don't think that if the goal here is to give these young defensemen who you straight up said you think are ready for a long look, if that's the goal, if the goal is to give them a shot, I don't know how re-signing Sean Walker fits. I don't know how it does. Unless you make a bunch of big trades. Like, if you trade, then we talked about this in the lead up to the deadline. If they trade Rasmus Ristolainen in the offseason, might not be easy given the fact that he missed the entire, you know, second half of the season basically, and will be, you know, on the shelf for a couple of months recovering from this surgery. If you trade him, I'm a little bit more open to the idea of bringing back Walker. But if you can't trade him, I don't know where he fits. And even if you do trade Risto, I still don't quite know where he fits. I'm just a little bit more open to the possibility that you can find a way to make it all work.
I liked Sean Walker a lot. He was a lot of fun to watch. He turns 30 in November. He's going to need a long-term contract. This is it for him. This is his chance to cash in.
He should.
He'd be dumb to sign some sort of, like, Flyers hometown discount because he likes John Tortorella or something, who's probably not going to be the coach in 18 months. Like, that would be insane. And I want to leave spots for the kids, and I want to leave spots for, like, these high-end players we're going to be getting at some point. Where are they going to play? They don't have any yet, and they have a whole bunch of defensemen. Like, yeah. I just don't see, like, I don't see how it fits this team's timeline at all.
Yeah, and we talked about this during the lead up to the deadline when Sean Walker was a major topic of conversation. At times during the year, I like the idea of maybe signing him as something of a bridge to Bonk, you know, sign him to a 2-3 year deal. When they got Jamie Drysdale, it changed the entire calculation, because Drysdale's a guy who they are going to need to play every night. They want him to develop into one of those high-end guys. They think he can. Whether he can or not, I guess we'll see. But they believe in his skill set. For me, Drysdale takes the spot that Walker would have taken. That's my view of it.
And that was today's mailbag question of the day.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think that'll basically do it for us on this Monday, our first 1 p.m. Monday of the offseason. Mark this in your calendars. Make sure you're subscribed on our YouTube. We're going to be here until otherwise noted at 1 o'clock every Monday. So make sure you have those reminders set. Never miss a live show. Make sure you're following us on, I almost said Facebook. Do we even have a Facebook?
I think we have a Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter at @PHLY_Flyers, PHLY Flyers, wherever you get your podcast. That'll do it for us. My name is Bill Matz. For Charlie O'Connor, we'll see you tomorrow, Philly.
We all silly like the mayor.